Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Every morning at 8 a.m., we take the best question you have for Mark Schlereth using hashtag question mark on social media and the text line. And now it's time for Question Mark.
We had told you earlier that former Broncos safety T.J. Ward had marijuana possession charges against him dropped, so he's got that going for him, but he is still a free agent. And this question comes in on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. Mark, when will you realize that John Elway did the right thing in letting T.J. Ward go? That's why he is a great general manager and has a record that speaks for itself. You have to make tough calls, and bottom line, Ward couldn't play anymore.
You're going to get one injury-riddled year and say a guy can't play anymore. I think there is more to being great when it comes to decision-making. And I think there are those moves that have to be made, those tough decisions that have to be made. And I get that aspect of it. I really do. I also believe there is value in retaining certain guys because of what they mean to that locker room. And it's a very, very fine line. And I said this all last year, and it turned out I was right. I said it all last year. It's not going to matter until it matters. It's not going to matter until the guy that replaces him botches a couple of things. It's not going to matter until all of a sudden they don't have that leadership and there's infighting and there's some bickering. Those things aren't going to matter until they end up mattering. And as soon as this team started losing games, because it didn't matter the first couple of games, but as soon as they started losing games and that defense started getting torched and making mistakes, multiple guys, not one, not two, multiple guys came out and complained about T.J. Ward not being there any longer. And so you can sit there and, I mean, you can say whatever you want about it. And, you know, maybe he is past his prime. But again, those things, I will tell you the other thing. From a player's perspective, and it's easy as a fan to sit there and say, see, he was right. T.J. Ward, you know, marijuana possession, you know, was injured with Tampa Bay, and he was. But those things are easy. When we're talking about the money in the NFL, and his salary is just under $5 million, I believe. When I talked to Tampa Bay, because I called their game, they were like, $5 million is nothing to get that kind of leadership. And if he becomes half of what he normally is, it's going to be money well spent. Now, again, the hamstring never healed properly, whatever, and he missed multiple games. When he was in there, he certainly was a difference maker.
Let's connect the dots, because I think so much of what they did in the draft that we are congratulating them for is sort of connected to T.J. Ward. And let me explain. Because when T.J. Ward was let go, and you were talking about the idea of they're going to miss his leadership, my counter to you was, come on now. You're only a couple years removed from winning a Super Bowl. There should be new players that were there, that witnessed that, that were part of it, that should be ready to take that mantle, take that torch of leadership. That you can't, in this league, you have to be able to turn over and replenish and create new leaders. You can't hold on to a player whose best days as a player are behind him just because he brings that intangible leadership. He still has to be able to play. And my point was, there should be no shortage of new leaders ready to emerge for the Broncos that could make T.J. Ward replaceable. Well, guess what we learned? We learned they didn't.
Right.
And they recognized that and admitted that by what they did with their draft strategy this year, which was drafting a bunch of guys who were captains of their college teams. They are admitting to us that there was a leadership void. And so to your point, I guess you could say they did make a mistake in letting T.J. Ward go because they could have used his leadership. I think it's more of an indictment against the Broncos that how could you have wasted something like that 2015 experience and not had new leaders ready to step up.
What if you'd have kept T.J. Ward instead of just saying, hey, we want the $5 million back, if you kept him and you used him in a limited role and you started to work Simmons in there? You started to work them in together. And as the season progressed, you managed T.J. Ward's health and you gave your young player, Justin Simmons, more opportunity and more opportunity as the season went on. And then you had the best of both worlds and you got a young player that got to learn some veteran moves and veteran stuff from the mentor who's still getting a chance to play and limiting reps so he could stay healthy. I don't know. I mean, this is all hindsight being 2020. But we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Mike. When you have such strong leadership in a Peyton Manning, in a DeMarcus Ware, and I mean just incredible leadership, oftentimes there's this leadership vacuum that develops because nobody has to step up
their Peyton leadership will do role. It. Peyton will do it. DeMarcus Peyton, will do it.
Yeah, they've got it. And as soon as they leave, you realize, oh my goodness, we don't have it. Let me tell you a story about the end of my career. End of my career, 2000. My knee was just horrible, and I had multiple operations, and I ended up having sixth microfracture surgery, and the hole in the back of my knee was just, I mean, it was the size of a silver dollar. It just is raw bone exposed, and it just was a mess. And anyhow, I ended up having the surgery, and I'm sitting down, I'm talking with Mike, and this is probably Shanahan. This is probably November, and I'm just like, they just put me on IR, and I had the surgery, and I'm coming out, and I'm on crutches for however many days, weeks. It's like 6 weeks or 8 weeks, whatever it is. And we have a kind of a sit-down, and kind of what does the future hold? And I go, well, I'm not going to announce it as of yet, but I just can't. Like, I can't do this. I can't play this way. When you start looking at yourself as more of a hindrance than a help, it's just time to go. And my knee was so bad that it just was not going to be able to continue. And then Mike said this to me. He goes, I will pay you to stay here and back up. He goes, your leadership on this team is so valuable to me that I will pay you just to be a backup. I'll sign you to a 3-year deal, whatever. I'll sign you to a deal and I'll just have you as a backup. And as tempting as that was, my counter to that was, Mike, I can't be a backup. Not because of ego, not because my ego wouldn't allow me to be a backup. I could not stand on the sideline for 3 quarters and all of a sudden you need me in the fourth. I would be like the Tin Man needing oil. Like, there's just no way I could do that and be effective for you. So I think I go, it's just time. It's time to be done. And he tried to talk me out of it. I said, this is the time. And that was it. But Mike understood that it was more than my ability to play. It was, what I taught young kids and how I taught them to prepare and to study and, the bringing the breakfast in and sitting there together and learning the game together, that was part of the deal. And there's value in that, even if you have to spend some money in it. And that's where you have to be very, very careful about the decisions you make on guys like T.J. Ward.
But had there been somebody that had been brought in with the express purpose that everybody understood it, was there to replace you?
There was. Lenny Friedman was drafted in the second round, and they wanted him to be a player. Okay. They wanted Lenny Friedman to be a player.
The argument there is that the Broncos drafted Justin Simmons, a captain, by the way,
mm-hmm.
at Boston College, with the idea that he'd be able to replace T.J. Ward not only as a player, but also, based on his background, as a new leader.
Right.
And now here he is a couple years later, and he seems like he's poised to be that kind of guy, in addition to these other guys that they've drafted. So I mean, it didn't work out with Friedman.
Mm-mm.
At some point, don't you arrive as a franchise where you have to sort of say, okay, Schlereth can't play anymore. TJ Ward can't play anymore. We respect what they can bring as leaders, but sometimes you just got to rip the Band-Aid off and just turn it over to the next guy. Well, and he's got to be able to figure it out, both as a player and establishing himself as a new leader on that team.
Yeah, I think here's...
And you hope that he can do it, but if he doesn't, it didn't work out that way, but it was still something we had to try.
Right. I think there's a hard part to it. I think there are a lot of guys that you have to do that with. But I've always said one of the things that you need to understand is you need to understand the dynamic of the locker room and the importance certain guys have to a locker room. And I'll give you, for instance, back in our day, in the late 90s, one of the real big mistakes that Mike Shanahan made, now, it wasn't his fault, because Keith Burns was our special teams captain. Keith Burns was getting an opportunity to go be a starting middle linebacker for Chicago. And Keith Burns was one of the best glue guys for a locker room. I mean, he was a guy that brought the defense and offense together. He was a guy that was, during the tough times, brought levity into the situation. He was a huge, huge part of our locker room. And it was devastating when he was allowed to leave because he was getting an opportunity to play middle linebacker. And that wasn't Mike Shanahan's fault. That wasn't the Broncos' fault. But that was just the way the league worked. We had won multiple championships, and guys are going to get opportunities. But it was for us, it was a devastating loss. You know, that personality and that kind of guy, and, you know, hindsight being 2020, you look at it and go, is it worth paying a guy extra money to stick around, even though he's your special teams, you know, it's a special teams captain? Again, those are the type of things you need to really have a great pulse on your locker
room. But he has to be able to play, because you yourself have said there's nothing more invisible of a feeling than being on a team and being hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You might as well not even be there. Right. You don't feel like you're a part of the team. Your impact is greatly reduced. So let's say you had taken Mike up on his offer and you had stayed here as a backup offensive lineman. But, you know, you said you weren't feeling good. Let's say you continue to be injured and you couldn't really practice and you were spending most of your time back in the trainer's room with Greek. Same thing with TJ Ward, who ended up being hurt. You know,
right.
Last year, how effective of a leader can you be,
right,
if you're spending all your time back in the trainer's room?
Right. Well, I would say this. Do you think Lenny Friedman, who, you know, didn't turn out to be great, do you think that spending time with me in film study and going through all the things that you need to recognize, do you think that would at least give you a leg up mentally on the game that would help you become a better player? That would be like my question would, or my answer to that would be, obviously. Now, are you going to take it and run with it on the field, or are you physically gifted enough to play? But my part would be to help you mentally prepare to play the game the right way and to be so dialed in that you don't have to think. You could just react to things. Now, are you physically gifted enough to be good? And the answer to that was probably not.
But you only got 53 men on the roster.
Right.
Even less for game day. And one thing that I've learned over the years, and you know it from playing, coaches take all those roster spots very, very seriously, mm-hmm. especially the game day ones. So can you really afford to have a role of a veteran emeritus there to sort of be the leader?
So basically what you're saying to me right now, I hear where you're going. What you're saying is Mike was just being nice to you and he was going to cut you.
Yeah, I wonder what he would have done if you had actually said yes.
Yeah. He's like, did you say yes?
I'm sorry. Is there a bad connection here?
Right. I'm going to have
to. Let me get back to you.
We were face to face, but he's like, yes, huh? Well, let me look at the money we have and then I'll try to create.
Because I love the idea of the veteran mentor, but the veteran mentor has to still be able to play and produce. The only sport of the big four where you can have that role that you're talking about is basketball.
Right.
You know, the Nuggets had it this past year with a Richard Jefferson where, you know, let's face it, for most teams, you're only using eight, nine men, you know, that you're really counting on.
Right.
So out of your 12-man roster, you can actually afford to carry a guy whose only job it is to be the veteran mentor.
Yeah, and that had a great effect. Look at that playoff run that went on.
You know what I mean, though.
Oh, wait.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying.
Nugget fans wow, going to be all over.
See, I'm trying to be.
No, you're 100% right.
You can do that in that sport, but you can't do it in football.
But here's where
hockey.
Here's where it would have worked for me.
Baseball, I guess you could.
I could have gotten through another couple of years of practice because we didn't beat each other up. You know, training camp would have been difficult, but once the season started, and then if I wasn't even dressing during the week, like if I wasn't even dressing out, so I was practicing on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and helping mentor some young kids, and then I didn't have to suit up, and I didn't have to take, you know, 70 snaps and beat the snot out of myself, could I have survived another year or two? Probably. Might have maybe even thrived. But, you know, it was like the jumpy gatherer syndrome. Pay me, but don't play me. I can't play, but, you know, I'll hang around for a while. Yeah, he was just, all this time I thought he was doing me a solid, and really, he was just like, hey.
Next time we see Mike, we got to ask him. So, that speech that you gave Mark, let's say he had said, okay.
What?
Wasn't expecting that.
Okay, nothing. Yeah. Turns out we don't have the money. I'd have been cleaning toilets or something. You know. Where's Slarrett? Oh, he's in fixing the bathrooms.
On the Ramoslaw.com text line, hey, Mark, I'm enjoying my morning coffee. Please continue to describe the gaping hole in your knee in explicit detail, will you?
That would be great.
So, TJ Ward, not coming back, is a free agent. But I think the Broncos are in that, that's what makes where they're at such a precarious position. It could go one of two ways. Well, I guess it could go three ways. I mean, either this is a team that has sort of bottomed out over the last 28 games, 10-18, and now they're starting to change things around with a different approach, maybe some stability quarterback, on and on. Or they're sort of plateauing, and they're not done plateauing, and we're looking at another 7-9, 8-8-ish type season. Or maybe this thing hasn't bottomed out yet. And, you know, you look at all the reasons why this thing could go any of a number of directions. I think part of it is people like me thought they had enough leadership in reserve to be able to allow a guy like TJ Ward go who couldn't play anymore. But it turned out they didn't.
Mike.
And now they're trying to address that. But do they have enough, and is there enough coming in to make that immediate of an impact, to make that kind of a difference? Who knows?
There's a couple things, I think. I think that Case Keenum is one of the big additions because of exactly that. The leadership, I'm in charge, I'm the quarterback, I've earned that right. And I think there has been this leadership void, and it's hard to figure that out when everybody has always leaned on Peyton Manning for years. You didn't have an established quarterback. There was a quarterback competition. It doesn't lend itself to being, you know, to being that kind of leader. Wide receivers, nobody wants to look at a wide receiver for a leadership as much as they like to think of themselves as you know, as the linchpin to all things offense. Nobody looks at the receivers. Like, name me one wide receiver in this league that you like. That guy leads his football team as and
oh, wide receiver?
Yeah. I mean, one guy. There's one guy in my mind that sets the toughness tone for an offense that plays wide receiver. The only one.
Julio Jones?
No, it's Julian Edelman. He sets tone. Maybe Larry Fitzgerald.
I don't know. Any offense that has Tom Brady on it, I don't know if you can point to a wide receiver.
No, but he sets a toughness tone.
Toughness tone?
Right. He's like, normally you'd say, hey, our offensive line sets the toughness tone,
okay,
or our running back,
saying.
Right? Julian Edelman sets the toughness tone.
Give me a
maybe
team.
Maybe it's Larry Fitzgerald is the one guy that leads his football team offensively at that position.
Right.
Okay. But beyond that, nobody's looking to that position as a leadership position. And frankly, as much as I love Von Miller and as good a player as he is, I don't think he is a guy that's comfortable kind of leading, being in charge. I mean, he's happy action, go fun day, you know, I'm down for whatever. That's Von Miller. I want to go out and sack the quarterback. I'm going to jump off sides a couple of times a game, but it's okay because I'm going to be a great player. That's who he is. I just don't know like that he wants to be kind of in charge of that lead. Give that to somebody else. So now it's time to figure out who that is. Can it be a Chubb? Can it be a Justin Simmons in his second year? Is it, you know, Chris Harris Jr. at the cornerback position? I don't know, but that's part of what they're trying to establish.
You took an unnecessary crack there at the Nuggets, by the way. Come on, we're trying to spread a little summer goodwill here.
I've got confused. I thought maybe they made the playoffs. Maybe I was missing something with the mentorship.
No, but as you try to get to that cusp, and apparently some people think that they're out now ready to cross that threshold. I'm looking at ESPN's.
I'm sure.
I'm looking at ESPN's way too early power.
Oh, really?
Rankings for next year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Golden State, not surprisingly, number one.
Okay.
Houston, number two.
Mm-hmm.
Philadelphia, number three, with the expectation that they'll, you know, go after somebody like a Paul George or a LeBron or a Kawhi Leonard. Celtics at number four. Utah Jazz at number five.
Right.
Mm. San Antonio at number six.
Mm-hmm.
Toronto at number seven.
Okay.
New Orleans at number eight.
Sure.
And your Denver Nuggets at number nine. Number nine.
So where does that put them, in the top third or in the middle third?
Well,
top third, right?
There's 13
teams.
The good news is they're ninth. Uh-huh. The bad news is they're still sixth in the West, because six of the nine are from the West. But
right. Well, hey, what happens when they sign LeBron James?
Oh, well.
Because LeBron said he really, really, kind of like Kobe, when they had a meeting with Kobe, you know, top secret meeting. I mean, that was legit.
Not putting a whole lot of hope into the whole LeBron to Denver thing, huh?
No. Unless his private jet has to lay over to fuel up. We got to swing into Denver.
Why?
We
need to get some fuel.
We need to get some fuel. Yeah. Guess who's going to be on the tarmac?
Rocky.
At Centennial. It's going to be the Nuggets. Hi, LeBron. Hi. Had a meeting with the Nuggets. Went really well.
That's not going to. All right. Folks, I'd like you to direct all your inquiries on Twitter. That'd be at Mark Schlereth.
Right. Rocky's.
Leave me out of this
gas tank.
Leave me out of this one this time, okay? I'm not saying I don't deserve it in the past, but not this time, okay? All right. There is a different angle, a different reason why Case Keenum is here, and it goes beyond just simply perhaps being the man at quarterback for the Broncos. We'll tell you about that next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Dan Orlovsky was a backup quarterback in this NFL for about 10 years, former UConn Husky, and now a very good commentator, NFL Network, also very active on social media when it comes to all things NFL. Had a chance to talk to him, and Mark asked him, point blank, give me an assessment, breakdown of Case Keenum.
I've played against Case a couple times, and every time you go into the game, you know, in a way, your mind goes, oh, we're playing against Case Keenum. And then he throws for 300 on you, and you're like, wait, what just happened? You know, you have that kind of that stereotype in your mind. You know, going into free agency this year, I started breaking down all the quarterbacks and saying, okay, what are guys? Who are they? And I came out and made the comment that Case Keenum last year probably had the easiest job out of all starting 32 quarterbacks in the NFL because of the stuff he had around him. He had a number one pass catching dude in the NFL, a really good tight end, a fantastic play caller, a big-time defense. And I said, listen, if he wants to go and try and replicate that success, he has to go to a place that has those pieces there, those variables there. And I said, the only place that has it is Denver. I mean, if you look at the receivers that they have with Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, well, he's got his Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. And then with the tight ends, I mean, I love Jake Butt and Fumagalli, I think, is going to be really good. So Kyle Rudolph and type guys. Musgrave's a really good play caller. He's got a big-time defense again. So I think that he's going to have a season very similar to that he did last year because of those pieces around him, because of those variables that are around him. He fits Musgrave's offense perfect. I mean, Case is I have to drop back. I have to throw into windows with timing and rhythm, anticipation. That's what he's done his whole life because he's had to. He's never been the overpowering physical talent, so he fits the offense perfect.
Dan Orlovsky joining us. And, Dan, all that makes perfect sense. I guess the biggest thing that has held me back from totally embracing this is that the team that knew him the best, the Vikings, never committed at all to him during the course of the season while he was helping them save their season and had no interest once the season was over. They immediately made goo-goo eyes for Kirk Cousins. Does that send up any kind of red flag at all?
No. My initial reaction is there's just not a lot of teams in the NFL that know the quarterback position that well. I mean, that's just being honest. That's why we see so much failure at the position is because more quarterbacks are ruined than they are made when it comes to the NFL. And the reality is the Vikings have this window in saying we have this team in place that we think is a Super Bowl champion contending football team. And as good as we were, Case Keenum probably got us as far as he could take us, which was the NFC title game, you know, or the division game. So if you go, there's a guy out there that we think can take us further, well, then you have to, if you're doing everything you can organizationally, it says more to Kirk Cousins than it does to Case Keenum to me. And so I still think that Case Keenum, as much as people want to knock him, he's the guy that was part of taking that team to the NFC title game. I mean, he was a big part of that. And so we can't run from the fact of what he was able to do.
Dan, what makes a good play caller? You mentioned Bill Musgrave is a good play caller. Well, in your mind as a quarterback, what makes a guy a good play caller that will be efficient and help his quarterback?
Yeah, I think the first thing is you've got to be able to understand what your guy is and what he isn't. And don't ask him to do things he's incapable of or be somebody that he's not. That's so often the case in the NFL as we try to take, especially at the quarterback position. We try to take these quarterbacks and these play callers come from offenses of their past and they say, oh, well, I had this quarterback and he was able to do it, so this guy should. And he's just not able to. It's not that he's a lesser player. It's just not what he does. And so I think you have to truly understand what your guy does well. Well, Musgrave likes to call offense that is predicated on a shorter passing game. And it's not the dink and dunk. It's just efficiency. It's getting the ball out in rhythm. It's always moving the chains forward. I mean, Musgrave is one of those guys that comes from a system where they believe in advances, which is quarterback, you know, the completions you get per game and attempted runs. If you add that up to like, if you add all your completions in a game and then all your attempted runs, if you're over 50, your chances of winning are like 80%. And so that's going to be what their offense is. And that's Case's greatest strength. So I think that'll be a big part of it. You've got to have incredible feel. You know, you can't robotically call games. There's sometimes that you just go, I don't know why I called that play. It just felt like the right moment. That's part of it. And getting your guy into a rhythm and understanding that you've got to be strong in who you are. This is, hey, we're going to be a West Coast passing team, but you also have to go into every game going, okay, if there's something that we feel we could take advantage of, you've got to be willing to be flexible in those regards. So I think there's a lot of variables that go into it, but truly the biggest thing is understanding who your guy is and asking, not asking him to be somebody he isn't.
Speaking of that, you know, I think a lot of that fell onto Paxton Lynch coming here from Memphis and being a spread quarterback and then trying to get into more of a Gary Kubiak traditional offense, and it just didn't really work. Never been really played under center, which is a big deal because of the timing of your drops and the route combinations that go into that. And I think it's a big learning curve, but after 2 years, people are just done. Here in Colorado, I mean, Broncos country is just like, we're done with that dude. Just ship him out. Too early to ship that guy out. Can he become an efficient player and an efficient quarterback in a traditional NFL system?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people in L.A. that wanted to ship off Jared Goff before last season, too, and some things changed. You know, I think it's too early. I mean, first of all, he hasn't played that much. I mean, you knew taking him what he was. He was a guy that physically was impressive, but that was somewhat of a project. And so you have to have the patience there. He's also had three offensive coordinators in 2 years. You know, so when I've watched him play, he doesn't stand out to me and go, well, that guy just doesn't belong. He just can't play. I mean, he's had all these coordinators in 2 years. He's played some games without some key weapons. He's played behind an offensive line that was just, if being kind, okay. You know, so we can't just take this guy and go, he's a waste of a draft pick. Well, he hasn't really been in the position to be successful. And it goes back to what I was stating before about Musgrave, putting guys in positions to be successful. I do think that his game is fittable to where the NFL world is right now. I do think that, you know, he matches up with some of the stuff we're going to get a little bit more spread out more than likely and quick passing game and getting the ball out of our hands and whatnot, and utilizing some of the quarterback athleticism. So I think it's way, way too early to write him off. I think I said this when they decided to sign Case Keenum. I think it said more about Paxton Lynch than anybody, because John Elway came out after last season and said, I will do everything to fix this situation at the quarterback position, everything. And I think them signing Case Keenum is going, well, we're not ready to give up on Paxton Lynch, because Case Keenum's a guy has always had to do the little things. I said he was never the physically gifted guy. He's always had to study really well, understand windows, timing, anticipation, leadership. All those things he's going to be able to give Paxton and help Paxton in his development. And I think that was part of the decision-making here. Yes, they like Case. He's going to be a good player for them. But I also think that they believe he could have really, really positive impact on Paxton Lynch. I think it's way too early to write him off.
That's awesome. Great stuff. We really appreciate it, Dan. Thank you so much, buddy, and we'll be hooking back up with you later on in the season.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out, bud. Good talking.
Dan Orlovsky, former NFL quarterback, now a great, great commentator. And I love that comment. More quarterbacks are ruined in the NFL than made. Coming up, is there another reason Case Keenum is here other than being the answer to the Broncos' quarterback woes? That's coming up next.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
We're talking about Case Keenum maybe serving as much a mentorship role for Paxton Lynch as much as it is the hopes that he can go out and actually be the guy.
Well, I found that aspect of Dan's interview compelling. Like, is he here not only as the starting quarterback because of what he did last year and because of his ability to guide the offense?
Dan Orlovsky, former NFL backup quarterback, we had him on last hour. Here's what he had, his take on maybe the multiple reasons, another reason Case Keenum's here.
John Elway came out after last season and said, I will do everything to fix this situation at the quarterback position. Everything. And I think them signing Case Keenum is going, well, we're not ready to give up on Paxton Lynch, because Case Keenum's a guy that has always had to do the little things. I said he was never the physically gifted guy. He's always had to study really well, understand windows, timing, anticipation, leadership, all those things he's going to be able to give Paxton and help Paxton in his development. And I think that was part of the decision-making here. Yes, they like Case. He's going to be a good player for them. But I also think that they believe he could have really, really positive impact on Paxton Lynch.
Okay. So serving a mentorship role as much as trying to be the guy here in Denver. I remember back when we were going through the whole quarterback debate around the draft. And Peter King, the very reputable Peter King, he wrote more than once and said, look, Broncos and John Elway aren't prepared to give up on Paxton Lynch yet. So for those of you banging the drum for them to go out and draft some quarterback at five, they haven't given up on Paxton yet.
Right.
Okay. And it turns out that King, like on a lot of things, was pretty close to being right. So what is driving this? Is it the honest football evaluation assessment that the Broncos have finally arrived at that, hey, you're right. He is a 2 to 3 year project. This is year three. There is no reason to think he can't turn out to be the quarterback that we thought he could be when we drafted him in the first round. Is it that strictly football evaluation, or is it ego driven? We don't want to admit we made another mistake.
Right. So I think letting this mull around in my mind a little bit, I think there's a couple of things that would point to the direction of it is not ego driven. It's sound football strategy, and it's an admission of a mistake they have made. I've been banging the drum for 2 years. You got to have a veteran quarterback, a veteran set of eyes. Mike, you know what's better than two eyes when you're studying film? Four eyes. You know what's better than four eyes?
Six eyes.
Six eyes. It's part of it.
You know what's better than six eyes?
Eight eyes.
Seven eyes. Whoa.
Wait a minute. You hired a Cyclops? Wait a minute.
Hey, it's a big eye, though.
Yes, it is. It takes a lot in. Field of vision is good. But here's the deal. I was banging this drum forever because you need, even if the veteran quarterback is not the greatest quarterback, you need that veteran set of eyes. And that's why I said, hey, listen, it's Josh McCown. All right, you got to keep Mark Sanchez. You've got, like, I've been saying this forever. You went in with Trevor Siemian and Paxton Lynch, and then you got, you know, some guy off the street that never even saw the light of day. And then you go in, you know, again with Paxton Lynch and Trevor Siemian, and it's just not, like, it's not what you're looking for. It was a mistake. And here's the thing, even though they haven't come out and said, as an organization, these are the mistakes we've made, they've admitted their mistakes by the way they have gone about changing kind of their path. What did they do in the draft that was different, completely different this year than in years past?
Bunch of former captains.
Bunch of former team captains, good football players or great football players, you know, that happen to be athletes. Not just drafting athletes that we're going to develop. Not just, hey, we need more team speed, but really conscientiously going after the team captains. Also, they logged more miles this year than they've logged the last 2 years. Going out and visiting guys and watching guys play in bowl games. And, you know, I mean, they did their due diligence. It's an admission that what they were doing in the past wasn't good enough. And to me, this is an admission that we didn't properly groom our young player. The best thing that you can do to teach a young player how to play is put great veterans around him that will mentor him. It means far more than the coach. It means far more than a lot of the other things that you can do. And especially in a day and age where you no longer practice in pads, you have got to have guys that can teach young players how to play and speak their language,
all right,
that playing language.
Okay, and this is when I need to jump in and kind of call a little BS, okay? Because year one, I get it. He could have used that veteran quarterback mentor to really help show him the way. And when we were hearing these stories over and over and over again about last in, first out, that first year, I got you. Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you. But after you come back and you go through year two and you've heard the same exact things.
Sure.
And you know in that building, come on, you spent years in that building. You know what that building is like. You know the kind of overt, in-your-face type pressure and feedback that you get. You also have a pretty good idea, or you should have a pretty good idea, about what is being said about you behind your back. And if you can't figure that out on your own, after probably all the people who came to him and said, look, man, you gotta do this, you gotta do that. Put a friendly arm around him and say, hey, come on, man, you gotta do it. Or a kick in the butt that he probably received over the last couple of years. And the fact that it still hasn't clicked in yet, I don't know if you blame all that on just not having a veteran quarterback around. And the thought that a veteran quarterback now here is suddenly going to be the magic wand for all this?
May I ask you
this? I think you're asking a lot.
Let me ask you this. If Peyton Manning were still playing with Paxton Lynch, and Paxton Lynch was showing up the last guy in and the first guy out, you think Peyton Manning would have had an effect on him? You think Peyton Manning would have grabbed him, you know, by the scruff of the neck and said, hey, it's not how you become a quarterback? Do you think that would?
I don't know, but, you know, Peyton, for his entire career, especially all those years in Indy, it's not like any of the guys that they ever called on as a backup quarterback stepped in and shined.
Yeah.
And you know, how much of Peyton.
But I know they all learn how to work. You know, I know they all learned it. It's just like Tom Brady.
Ryan Mallett.
I asked
Ryan Mallett, figured it all out, and you know, whatever shortcomings Ryan Mallett may have in the NFL, it's not that he doesn't work hard.
It may just be his talent. Well, Ryan Mallett's a bit of an idiot. But, right. Yeah. Well, I think the bottom line is at least you see what it takes. What did Jimmy Garoppolo tell me? What I asked him, what did Peyton Manning teach you? Was it? And he said that this is not a job. Quarterback is not a job. It's a lifestyle, and you have to be committed to the lifestyle. And if you're not, you're not going to have success. Ryan Mallett was not committed to the lifestyle. Is Paxton Lynch capable of being committed to the lifestyle? I don't know. But I think they're going to give him an opportunity, and I don't think it's based on ego. I think it's based on he's exceptionally talented, and if he could figure this out, and the odds of him figuring it out would be far greater if he had a mentor, a guy that really cared about him and a guy that would really help him, as opposed to, hey, you're a rookie, you don't know anything, you came from Memphis, and then year two, hey, we're trying to give you a job without, you know, without... You're in a battle with the guy that's a year ahead of you, but redshirted 1 year for the job. I mean, there's no mentoring going on there.
All right. Interesting takes there on what exactly the Broncos' long-term plans are for Paxton Lynch. You know that Pritch and Cecil will have some thoughts on that and other Bronco-related items as we get set for mandatory minicamp coming up tomorrow. Pritch and Cecil coming your way next.